So last time we started talking about some of the background to Megillas Esther, some of the political underpinnings, the history of what exactly went on, how Ahasuerus, seemingly the very same Ahasuerus of the Megillah, was the one who stopped the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, whereas Koresh had given permission to the Jews to build the Beis HaMikdash, and it wasn't like they had to pry it out of him either. It's not like they had to go begging Koresh, please give us permission to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Pesukim in Ezra that we saw are rather enthusiastic about it. He was inspired. He was really excited about it. He pushed everybody to go, and he told those who don't go should at least financially support those who do. He gave them the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash to take back with them to rebuild. He was very excited about this. Hashem gave him all of his land. He should do something good with it, and he was very, very pushing for it. Ahasuerus stopped it. The reason was is that the locals in Israel, again, the locals at the time were mixed up. There was no nation whose land was Israel. Melech Ashur there rearranged all of the nations after they took over. They dispersed everybody into their own galus. And so the nations, the people who were locally there, did not want the Jews to rebuild. They complained to Ahasuerus, don't let them rebuild because it will be a political nightmare for you. Not that it'll be a religious nightmare for you, it'll be a political nightmare for you. They're going to rebel, that's what they do, these terrible Jews, that's what they do all the time. They make trouble for everybody if they build a Beis HaMikdash. They're going to have their own religious capital, and then they're not going to pay your taxes, and it's going to be terrible. This is what they always do. And he's like, yeah, I looked, it's what they always do. They rebelled, it was a disaster. I read the books about Nebuchadnezzar, it was a big fight. So I'm going to stop them from building a Beis HaMikdash. Now I argue that it was a political consideration. And if you look in Sefer Ezra, where we saw, there is very little that Ahasuerus says, yes, and I want them to worship my God. There is very little about, oh, I can't believe, can't let them worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no mention almost of God or any religion or anything at all in that story. Seemingly because he recognized, they pointed out, that out of the 127 Medinos that he has, there are going to be people worshiping different religions, and he's got to somehow deal with that. You can't get all of them to worship the same religion, and apparently that wasn't an issue for him. This was a political decision. I made the argument that it was a political decision for him, and I'm going to make the argument that the entire beginning of the Megillah, it's not really me making the argument, you'll see it's the Malbim. The Malbim makes the argument that it's really, really, really all about his political calculations, and that was political. It made sense. You don't want to start a rebellion. You don't want to start a rebellion if there's a chance to put it down before something can start up. So he's going to accept that and deal with that. This does raise a particular tension within the Megillah, though. Something that's unstated throughout the Megillah, but comes up in the Midrashim, comes up in Chazal a lot. What was Ahasuerus' attitude towards the Jews? As Jews, not as those, you know, Zionists in Israel who are trying to rebel and make a Beit HaMikdash. How did he feel about the Jews? So we know he stopped their building the Beit HaMikdash. Now, it's hard to believe that he didn't know that it was of religious value to them. He knew it was of religious value to them, but he, I'm going to argue, politically stopped. But what was his attitude towards the Jews? Because he's a politically calculated person, I'm going to argue. So we'll have to get there, right? So at some point, Esther, certainly at the beginning, Mordechai tells Esther, don't tell him you're Jewish. Now why? We'll have to deal with that. Correct. And I'm gonna argue that doesn't say that in the Megillah. It's a Gemara. Chazal tell us that he invited the Jews to the party explicitly. And, right? And the Chazal tell us that it was all kosher and that it was all, everything was fine. But it doesn't say it in the Megillah. The Megillah doesn't mention the Jews at all in the first parak. You can take a look. They're not explicitly invited to the party. It doesn't even mention that they went. We know that people are there. Correct. They all allude to it. Correct. Nobody was pushed. It was available. I'm going to argue the following. The Megillah doesn't mention it. Chazal in a lot of the Midrashim. Well, let's take a step back. I'm going to argue, and again, it's based on the Malbim, certainly the beginning of the Megillah is all about Ahasuerus and his Malucha. And you read the beginning, and you need this setup. I understand why you need this whole setup in the Megillah, but in theory, it's not necessary. That Ahasuerus made this party has nothing to do with the Jewish people. That he killed Vashti, he got rid of Vashti, has nothing to do with the Jewish people. That he selected another queen has nothing to do with the Jewish people until he selects Esther. And even that has nothing to do with the Jewish people until she intervenes. So I understand why it's all necessary for the build-up. She intervenes to eventually save the Jewish people. So I get it. But Chazal consistently try to put the Jewish angle into the story over and over and over again, even into those things which otherwise don't appear to be ostensibly Jewish. Meaning the party mentions nothing about the Jews. It doesn't.
Just think something about satisfying all the people.
All the people. Correct. All the people. And we know there were some Jews, at least, in Shushan. So Chazal, we're not making this up. This really was true. But it's not in the Megillah. Now, Mordechai wrote the Megillah. Why did he leave it out? It's a good question. But you'll see consistently that the Medrash tries repeatedly to put, Chazal, the Midrashim, try to give more context to make it more Jewish. Because you read the story, it's not terribly Jewish. But so I'm going to just take the angle for a moment. It's a political decision. So what was his attitude towards the Jews in general? We don't really know. Now, if you put yourself in the Ahasuerus' shoes, and you're going to stop the building of the Beit HaMikdash, now how many people really went? About 40,000 Jews. Now, how many Jews stayed in Paras, or in the other 126 Medinos? Probably more. As a political calculation, it's not the biggest deal. Meaning, we understand, for us it's hard to believe, what do you mean, the Beit HaMikdash? But for his perspective, if the Beit HaMikdash was really important, more of them would have went. The fact that more of them didn't went meant this is a fringe group. I didn't even have to deal with them. You could take one of two approaches. You could assume, no, Ahasuerus was a virulent anti-Semite, and he wants to stop the building of the Beit HaMikdash because he hates us, and stopping the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and he smiles as he did. Alternatively, and it's unclear which is true in the story, alternatively, he said, I'm Jews, non-Jews, I don't really care. Politically expedient, what's politically expedient? There's a handful of people all the way over there. Apparently, the rest of the Jews could care less. Korach gave them permission. Korach encouraged them all to go. He gave them all this stuff back, and they chose not to. He could have assumed, there's no polling, right? He could have assumed that the other Jews just don't care. So what happens there isn't terribly relevant for him. It's hard to know. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And each one loomed them in and that didn't come true. I'm putting on the big dead owner. I'm using the Kalin as my
correct. Son.
And they blew them in so they died. And that happened twice before I was there.
Correct. And yet the Megillah, correct. So let me just elaborate for everybody to make sure we're all on the same page. The Sukkim and Ezra say that Belshazzar did the same thing. Meaning we know that Yirmiyahu HaNavi, and it says, Bimlos, it says there, we know Yirmiyahu HaNavi says the Golos will be 70 years. 70 years from when? So we assume from the Korban. But that wasn't very clear, because there was a Golos, and there was Golos Yehoyachin. There were options to when you're counting the 70 from. Let's leave that, it was somewhat ambiguous. So Belshazzar, who's the Babylonian king, has a husband to say 70 years had passed, he takes out the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash, he takes out all the stuff and uses it as Suda and he dies. So he's very much aware of the calculation of the time. So to say that they don't know about the Beit HaMikdash is horrid. They know, or Belshazzar at least knows, and so you'll tell me no, the Babylonians knew. But Koresh is Persian. Koresh is after him, and he gets up and says, I'm going to send the Jews back. There was an awareness of how important the Beit HaMikdash was to the Jews, even to these foreign kings who lived all the way on the far other part of the world, apparently enough that Belshazzar had the Suda and he was killed, and then Koresh lets them go back. Now, if you look in the Megillah is silent. If you read the story with no background knowledge at all, Koresh makes a Suda. Chazal say that he tried to calculate the mass again for 70, and he said, and he was wrong, and therefore he made the Suda, and when it says the Kalim, Mikalim Shonim, assuming everyone in this room, but the Ashkenazim have a minhag that you read that with the Nigun of Eicha. The Sfaradim don't do it. But you read it with the Nigun of Eicha, because the Gemara says the Kalim, Mikalim Shonim is the allusion to the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, which leads many of the Mepharshim to be like, wait a minute, didn't Koresh send the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash back? And that's clear. That's like on my psukim. The Korah sent the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash back. He didn't send them all of them. He left some. Apparently enough to have a big suda. Okay? Fine. I always assumed that, no, he sent them back because of the disaster with Belshazzar. Belshazzar served his meal with all the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash, and he died. So I always assumed the Korah is saying, you know what, not the best idea. I'll get my own Kalim. It's okay. I can afford it. Send them back. But so none of that's in the text. Chazal all add that, not saying it's not, didn't happen, it did happen, but it's not in the text. The text is actually making a party. The text is clearly trying to limit it to a political calculation. But throughout the story, and this I don't really have a good handle on how you see it in the text all the time, what was the relationship of Ahasuerus to the Jews? And it's not in the text. What was the relationship of the random people in Shushan to the Jews? And it's also not exactly explicit in the text. Now, Chazal added in, they were there, they knew, right? And so there are different streams in Chazal. Now, when you see Midrash, when you see Ma'amar Chazal, sometimes they contradict each other, because there are different opinions of how it happened. They're not all mutually exclusive. Was Ahasuerus a worse anti-Semite than Haman? There's one opinion that says, yeah, Ahasuerus was worse than Haman. And there's one that says, no, he wasn't. We'll have to see where that comes from. There are hints in the text to all of these things. They're all hinted at. Nothing is made up. They're all hinted at. But it's not, they specifically chose not to leave it in there. Now, there's an opinion that says, you know why? Who's writing the Megillah? Mordechai. Who's the king? Ahasuerus. You can't say not nice things about him. He's right there. So, okay. So that's, some say that approach, that's not necessarily the Mahalach of the Rishonim, something to think about. But on the other hand, Chazal put Megillah Esther into Tanakh. Because they assumed it was written by Ruach HaKodesh. I can't believe that Ruach HaKodesh filtered things for political censorship. If it's part of our Tanakh, it's Divrei Kabbalah, I have a hard time believing that it was filtered, that maybe whatever they wrote was filtered for Ahasuerus, but the fact that Chazal decided to include this sefer in Tanakh means that, no, the text as we have it is meaningful as it is. It doesn't mean, chas v'chalila, that the Midrashim and Chazal is not meaningful. It certainly is. But that the text we have is meaningful, it's on purpose, it's not just to appease the Ahasuerus. We don't put things in Tanakh to appease foreign kings. Maybe they wrote something else at the time. I can imagine that you're writing a letter while he's standing there. You're not going to, you know, you'd be careful. But the fact that we put it in Tanakh, I would argue, sort of says, no, the text here is important. Also, we'll get there. Bezras Hashem. But nonetheless, it's written by Ruach HaKodesh. The text itself is written in Oracle. Correct, they're all hinted. We'll get there. Bezras Hashem, correct. So that will do. So I have, that, I was debating doing that today, but I think we're going to push that next time. So the background of the politics. If you look at the beginning of the Megillah, Vayibim Achashverosh Achashverosh. And the Nahal Alban points this out. Hamolech Mehodu Badkush, Sevas Rameh Medina. Bayamim Mekashavas Hamelech Achashverosh, Alkite Malchuso. There's a very, very strong, repeating again, he's the king. Al-Kisei Malchuso, Asher B'Shushan Habira, B'Shnat Shalosh L'Molcho. Three times, he's the ruler. Because it wasn't so clear. There was a political upheaval at the time. Again, he's not the son of the king. He was a minister, he was a general in the army, whatever it was, but he rose through the ranks. But more importantly, we're going through a lot of rulers in a very short amount of time. There's instability in the political stage in Madai and Paras. And so Ahasuerus is trying to establish his leadership. And the Malbim argues that's exactly why he's making this party. So Chazal say, well, it's at the end of the 70 years. Even that works in. He's now establishing himself as the leader. Now, when you think about it, who's the biggest opponent, politically speaking, to Ahasuerus? I wasn't there, so I don't know. I'm sort of guessing. I'm assuming it was the Babylonians. Meaning they were previously in charge.
He had a big war with the Greeks.
He had a war with the Greeks, but now the Babylonians, though, although he took over, although he conquered from the Babylonians, they're still there. Meaning he took, they didn't kill them all out. They're all physically present.
They took turns.
Madai and Paras are working together, but the Babylonians from before, meaning Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar was the last of the Babylonian kings, the people are still around. And he's not just conglomerate, he's taking over a much larger area. It's like more of an imperial system. He has a whole empire of 127 lands, and the Megillah goes over it and repeats a number of times. Everyone has their own language, and everyone has their own text. seemingly indicated that it was okay on some level. I'm not going to say they were pluralistic. That's anachronism. That wasn't true back in the day, but they recognized that people did things differently. And they was going to be the king over many, many cultures and many, many people, that they're not all going to always agree on everything. And he sort of recognized that, and he needed, he needed to secure his leadership over everyone. So I'm going to suggest that the Babylonians were one of the most fiercest opponents, internal opponents he had. They were the last regime, and the Persians took over. The Persians, let's assume Paras and Madai go together for a moment. They have an alliance. So the Persians, the Medians, they go together, and the Babylonians are still a little bit, still there. They're present, and they're not happy. So what's the best move if you're an ancient king and you want to make peace with another people?
If you
marry the daughter, you marry them. Right? They did this in England in the Middle Ages. So he marries Vashti, who's the daughter of Belshazzar. He's the daughter of the last Babylonian king. Now, there's a lot of points that you mean. First of all, it's known, I'm now in charge, I can marry the Babylonian princess. But it also, on the other side, makes the Babylonians feel like they're important a little bit. You can't ignore them, right? Right, that brings them closer. She's like their man on the inside, sort of. Vashti's their man on the inside, and it's a politically expedient thing that she is now their man. So they feel closer, and that's one way of, like, you know, appeasing them a little bit. And now, none of this is here, I'm guessing a little bit, but we know the Chazal tells us that Vashti is Belshazzar's daughter. So if I'm going to be correct, and the Malbim suggesting that it's all politically expedient, it makes sense politically. If I had to recreate what was going through his mind, I'm assuming she was a beautiful woman also, fine, but I'm sure he had his pick of beautiful women, which we know from the next part of the Megillah. So her specifically, because it was politically expedient, it made sense.
Where's the source of Vashti being Belshazzar's daughter?
I don't have the Gemara, but the Gemara says. The Gemara suggested.
It's not in the Megillah.
It's not in the Megillah. Correct, it's not in the Megillah, but Chazal tell us that they identify that that's true.
It also makes sense that she can, quote, disobey him.
Correct, we'll get to there in a moment.
Who are you?
Right, so why does she disobey? Precisely. Precisely. So in this party, I'm going to argue it's a party, and if you look at the text now, who does he invite? So what's the point? Look at Pasuk Gimel. Who does he invite? All like the middle management of all the 127 people, of the 127 nations. Because you can't invite everybody. You invite the leaders, the ministers, you make them feel close, you make them feel good. Why? To appreciate the vastness, the wonder, the grandeur of his empire. They're celebrating nothing. They're celebrating how great Ahasuerus is. Effectively, he's inviting them to feel close. He's inviting them to feel, so that's how you create bonds. Have a drink. He makes this for everybody. He invites everyone in because it makes sense. He's establishing himself. You want to get everybody together. Getting everybody together is always a good thing. It'll create a more sense of camaraderie, a sense of achdus. You could imagine that this didn't happen very frequently. That all 120 ministers of 127 nations got together. And now, he now makes the party, second party, or the end of the first party, for the people in Shushan. The people in Shushan, after all, are his people. Right? He needs them to feel important, too. I can't be just being mechabed, the leaders of all the foreign nations, and forget about my own people. And so he has a party for his people. And this, something like that, but this is actually a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Did it make sense? If you look in the middle of the page, trying to find the middle of the page, on the first page is the Gemara and the Gilead base. It says, right? Rav and Shmuel. It's on the right side, it says Shmos. And then three words in. Rabbi Shmuel. Chadamar melech tikeach haya, v'chadamar melech tipeish haya. One says Ahasuerus was smart, one says Ahasuerus was a fool. What's it based on? Because I remember in kindergarten I was taught Ahasuerus was a fool. But this point, I think, is very clever. Why? Mandamar melech tikeach haya. So why was he smart? Because how he did the part. Shafir ava, the car of rechika v'resha. The b'nei mas, they call emas the b'ayim v'fayet lu. He says, no, it was smart. He had the party for the foreign people, I'm calling them foreign, the other 127 nations first, because the people in Shushan, whenever he wants, they're not going to feel left out. Why did you do us first? We're here. We can have a party with you whenever we want. Do you understand why you dead them first and us second. They're not going to feel like second-class citizens. They're always there. However, umanda marti beshaya, the ibile le krube bnei masi bereise, the imardube hamach, hami abukai mevahadeh. He said, the other one says, no, you have to celebrate and honor the people in Shushan first. Why? Because if you're going to have a problem, there's going to be political upheaval. Where's it going to start? It's going to start with the people in Shushan. So you need them to be happy. So what are they arguing about? They're arguing about political theory. They're arguing about political philosophy. What makes better politics? I am explicitly not drawing on any current events. What makes better politics, right? This is what they're arguing about, Rav and Shmuel. Which is the better political move? I would argue that the one who says Tifesh doesn't think he was a fool, meaning Rav thought what he did was brilliant. And or it does unclear who says which. One says one, one says another. Let's assume Rav. Rav says, assumes he's brilliant, and Shmuel says he's a fool. But Rav thought he was brilliant for making this move. It's not like a jester type of a, you know, someone who's tripping over his own feet type of thing. It's whether you agree with the political calculation or you don't agree with the political calculation that Ahasuerus made at the time. What I take from this is it was a political calculation. Whether it was a good political calculation or a poor political calculation, it was politically calculated. When do you even invite to have to these different parties? And that's an important thing to point out. The Malbim, if you the Malbim here is effectively much of this is based on the Malbim. I'm not going to fault him for all the other errors that I may have put in, but he says that he is establishing Shushan also as now the capital, it's a Persian city. He's establishing the Persians as being in charge, and he has this whole party. So now, right, correct, which is one holds yes and one holds no. He shouldn't have. But the point is, it was a political calculation. It's all what makes the most sense politically. Fine. And then, so this is just, we'll point out, this is where the hints in Chazal are that they use Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. It goes through an elaborate detail of what they use. Chur, karpas, v'tcheilas, achuz, v'chav, leivut, v'argaman, galilei, chesef, amudei, shei, opulent and over the top. It's like, who cares? Who cares? Like, do I care what kind of stones and rubies they had on the table? He's doing it for what purpose? To impress the leaders. Meaning, you join me and this is what you're joining. This is who you are, right? When they show you the model apartment, it's always great, right? You show the clubhouse. This is what you're going to be part of. You're part of this wonderfully opulent over the top. Like, who cares? Really, really, who cares what kalim they use? But it's still choosing to tell us because that's what's important. Because he's trying to show off. He's trying to get them to join his group. We pointed out the Gemara says kalim shonim. After you just give me a whole description of all the different kalim. What do you mean, kelim shonim? Different kelim. So that's a reference to the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, maybe. Fine. Vashdiya kadas einoneis. Nobody was forced to drink. The Gemara there says why. He had different wine for the Jews and different wine for the Goyim, so there shouldn't be a problem of Yai Nesach. Fine. So now, gam vashdiya malka asta mishtei nashim beit ha-malchus ha-shelo malach ha-shreiros. Vashdi also wants to make a party. Gam vashdiya malka. Also. Why? We have no idea. I'm going to suggest that if it's Gam Vashti Hamalka Asta Mishtei Nashim, based on Malchus HaShelem Achashverosh, it's parallel to his party. Whoa, relax, Achashverosh. You're establishing yourself as a new Persian ruler. We're the Babylonians. Don't forget about us. I'm the princess. You know what? You know what? I'm the queen because I'm the princess. I'm not the queen because I married you. I'm the queen because I'm the princess. You married me because I'm the princess. She's more of like a reactionary, going back to the old political system that happened before. She's effectively saying, the Chazal tell us, she was upset. What do you mean? I'm not someone, you can't forget what happened before. I represent all the Babylonians, all that was before, and she's going to celebrate that. And she makes the party now also. Now, you can't really, I mean, I can't imagine that she could have gathered everybody to make a political rally. I don't see that really happening so much in ancient Persia, political rallies ending in a peaceful way. Even in modern times, you know, in parts of the world, rallies don't end peacefully. In this country, we sort of assume, like, okay, you rally, I'm like, okay, maybe people get a little bit out of hand, but like, they end peacefully. But back in the day, they just killed everybody. But now she has the perfect excuse. You're making a party. I'm making a party. We're all making parties. It's all good. And she seems to be establishing her own thing. And you know what? That's when Ahasuerus has the bright idea to invite her. Ahasuerus doesn't just invite her Sam to the party. It's only if you're going to Pesukim. Gam Vashti, there's a break, right? There's a parsha, there's a break in the text, right? The parsha Stuma, there's a break. Gam Vashti Amal Gasta Mishnei Noshim Beit Amal Chazmer Shemal Ahasuerus. She also makes a party. And now Ahasuerus says, you know what, let's invite her over here. The Megillah puts one pasuk after another. Ahasuerus decides to invite her only after the Megillah tells us that she made her own party. Because why? He can't allow that. He can't let her have a party. And, not a party, a political rally, which he's calling a party. He can't allow it in his own castle, in his palace. He can't allow the Babylonians to gather. He can't allow Vashti to get support from anybody. Because Vashti represents the minority group. Vashti represents the people who are conquered. If that's really disastrous. That could be terrible. So Vashti, he can't allow that in his palace. But he also can't say that. Meaning, he can't acknowledge that he's threatened by her. Because when you acknowledge that you're threatened by her, you're giving her more power than she originally had. So he can't say that. He can't say, oh, I can't let you have the Babylonians in here because I consider them to be a threat to my own sovereignty. Because you've now empowered them to recognize that they're a threat to your own sovereignty, whereas before they just assumed they were, but no one said it explicitly. So he can't say that. He can't say that. But he needs to send the message anyway that, hey, Vashti, this isn't okay, this must stop, and you can't do this. So he needs, it's complicated. And in fact, he doesn't make the decision on his own. Right? He talks to seven people to go get Vashti. He needs seven messengers to get Vashti. They're having a conversation. What do we do? How do we deal with this? So how are you going to, first of all, you need to stop that. It needs to stop. That's clear. Her party, political rally, whatever you want, needs to stop. She needs to get the message that I'm aware of what's happening. This will never happen again. And if possible, put her in her place at the same time. And so what's the scheme they come up with? Now, they can't say any of this. If he says it, she wins. I mean, from her perspective, it's kind of calculated also, kind of clever, because she put herself in a position where she can't lose. Ahasuerus can't admit what's happening, otherwise she gains power and her people gain power. So, what do they say? They're going to bring her to show her off to the whole party that he's having. The Gemara says, without clothing on, the Megillah leaves it alone.
Crown.
Just the crown. So with the crown, right? So I'm going to focus on the crown also, but Chazal says just, it says the crown, but no other clothing maybe. Why? How does this, if I'm right, accomplish any of this? Why is she coming in front of the party? La'aros ha'amim v'asarim es yofia. What's she good for? Her good looks. Belshazzar was nice. That was cute. That was clever. It's nice. I married her because of the Babylonians. But she's being paraded with the crown. The crown, my crown. Ahasuerus' crown. All she's good for is her good looks. She has no power whatsoever. She doesn't represent the population. And although they should feel somewhat close, there's a distance. Close, yes, but not too close. And that's why he needs to put her in her place. He puts her in her place and says, you're going to come to be shown off because that's all you're good for. You're not a political player here in Shushan. And all of a sudden, she refuses. The feminist movement was not started yet. Now, yes, I'm not saying it's denigrating to women, and what he did was not appropriate, and it's not sneeze. All these things are true. But I can't imagine that in ancient Persia, a Persian queen refuses, and that's like a that even crossed her mind. But she can't allow Ahasuerus to do that. Because if Ahasuerus puts her in her place like that, then she loses her political power. Her whole point, that she has her whole base there, meaning she's at this party with her people, and now she's going to be like carried off like quietly, neatly, to be paraded in front of the men over there. It's not going to work. She has to show gravitas. She has to show that I'm in charge. So she refuses. But again, mentioning that sounds like, yes, admittedly he sent messengers, but the Megillah points out that the king's message, v'yad ha-sarisim, that there was some, I'm reading into that a little bit, but there was some conversation, some thought-out plan. This was not just a random thought he had. It says, ketov lev ha-melech v'yayim, when he was drunk. It's not because he was drunk. it was a well thought out plan. She refuses. He gets very upset. Now, why he gets very upset, even if none of this was true, he'd still get very upset. But now he's really upset and he doesn't know what to do. And he again consults another seven people. A different seven people. These are higher level advisors. Because now he's in the pickle. What in the world is he going to do now? Now he thought Vashti had this whole political rally to support her base. And he says, I'm going to stop it. And he found this very, very clever way to both stop the rally and put her in her place at the same time. And she now refuses. So now what do you do? Because if he lashes out too harshly, it gives her too much power. It's already acknowledging, I'm afraid of you. And that's giving the Babylonians too much reactionary power in the palace. So he's even willing to do anything on his own. He has to consult these higher level seven advisors to see where it's going to go with that. And Bezras Hashem, we'll continue next week.